Steel Plaza. Please stand clear of the doors.
Steel Plaza Podcast, 303 East Main Street, from right here in Carnegie. Sound Color Productions in the studio with Jay Weaver of Sound Color Productions Studios.
Hola.
There he is. Hola. He loves that. Hola. He loves that. And Jesse Meller, heart attack survivor and multi-instrumental genius.
Thank you.
Is here. Rayanne Rose, the smoking joke.
Yes.
Always. So, before we started the show, we started talking about your heart attack and the heart attack vest you had to wear.
Yeah. The vest was no fun.
The vest was no fun.
The heart attack was even less fun.
Yeah.
But, it happened on Mother's Day, Sunday night. We were done for the day with our events, you know, the Mother's Day stuff. And Natalie, you know, my old lady, wanted to paint rocks. And she paints these awesome rocks with, like, frogs and butterflies and ladybugs. And it's not just, like, you know, color, you know. It's actually really nice. I should probably post some pictures. But it was winding down.
We'll put that on the website.
Yeah.
The rocks.
Rocks. Natsrocks.com. That's not a real site. Don't go there. And I noticed that there was a would-be burrowing in the door frame above the front door. And I have them all over the house, and I went down to the basement, and I got my can of bug spray, and I figured I'd go to the back deck first, and I saw the guy, I saw him there, and I went to spray, but I missed, and I hit the side of the deck, and it splashed back and completely drenched me, like, in my face.
Was your mouth open?
My mouth was open, eyes open, everything.
I took a big hunk
of poison, and I said, okay.
I would have chased it with a Miller Lite.
I have one of those. I didn't have any, or else I would have. But at that point, I should have just put it away because it was obvious I wasn't able to handle a can of poison. But I figured I'd go up to the front and do the and get the guy that was drilling in the front of the house. And I just really underestimated gravity. And when I sprayed above my head, it rained poison on me. And again, I'm like, okay, I'm done. So I just tossed the can and just went in the house. And a half hour later, my chest started to hurt. And
Toxic Avenger.
Toxic Avenger. And I figured that, you know, a half hour later, my chest started to hurt. And I was like, oh, I just ate poison. No big deal. I'll be able to just let it to kind of cycle itself out. And then Monday, wasn't any better. But I had stuff to do, so
that's my thought process. Like, if I injure myself badly, I'm like, I don't have time for this. I can wait.
And I really didn't want to go to, like, see anybody over poison. Number one, it was embarrassing. Like, I just totally, I gassed myself, really. And,
I've been out huffing.
Yeah. So, you know, I come in, I have
junkie.
I have that that telltale sign of the bug spray around my mouth and nose. But I went down, took the car down the street, stopped at the gas station, got a Rockstar energy drink, got a third of it down, and my chest felt like it was going to explode. But I paid for it. It wasn't free, so I finished it. Bad idea. Do not drink one of those things in the middle of a heart attack.
I'm the same way. Like, if I buy any kind of drink or whatever from a get-go, and it tastes like horse piss, I'm going to finish it. I'm going to finish it because I paid for it.
That's right.
You know?
You know, if it was free, I might have considered not drinking it, but no, I paid for it.
It's the value.
So I went home. I laid in a chair for 2 hours. Couldn't move. It chest hurt so bad. But I continue on with my day. You know, went and had Chinese buffet later that day. Another thing not to do when having a heart attack.
MSG.
MSG, yeah. Sodium. Yeah. It was just, it was horrible. And finally they my friend Maddie and Natalie talked me into going to to see somebody, but I wasn't wasting the money on the ER. Mm-mm. I was like, it's just poison.
Right.
I was like, this thing will cycle itself out. I'll be fine. Wasn't fine. I get to the MedExpress, and I'm trying to be funny and joke around, like, hey, this is funny. I ate poison. And it's no big deal, right? And then they, like, put these, you know, the sticky pads on me and this thing on my finger. He did the EKG, and all the joking stopped. It was over. It was like, okay, it was like go time. And I said, you know, the EKG was fine, right? They're like, no. I was like, do it again. It's just your machine's broken. And then they got it back the second time, and they said, this isn't normal. I don't know what your normal is, but this is not normal for anybody. And then they kind of picked me up, like, one under each arm and, like, just rushed me across the room. And this little old lady came in with this little coat, and she was like, we cannot help you here.
So they crowd-surfed you, too.
They really did. I mean, these two little nurses, like, picked me up and just ran me over. Yeah, ended up in the ER. I was there 5 seconds, and they told me I had to go back and pulled my shirt off, start more sticky pads. And I'm like a hairy dude, right? Right. So every time they put these sticky pads on, I have to rip them off. Oh. It is...
It's like that scene from 40-Year-Old Virgin.
Yes.
I was like, why? That didn't stick. And they rip it off. Oh, we're not getting a good signal, probably because you're so hairy. Rip. It's like, And we just weren't getting it. Like, the guy was like, well, you had a heart event. We're like, uh-huh. Well, there's going to be some permanent damage to your heart and blah, blah. We're like, yeah, it's poison. We're like, no, you had a heart attack. And they call it the Widowmaker for its low survival rate. I was like,
I didn't know that heart attacks had categories.
Yeah,
that was. Yeah, I've heard of the Widowmaker before.
I thought it was just like, it's a heart attack and that's what it is.
Depends what artery it's in. My dad actually had that same thing with the Widowmaker. He ended up getting a stent though, but.
I had one.
They told my mom, they had to tell my mom that. They said, oh, it's the Widowmaker. And that's my mom's like, oh my gosh. You know, she's already scared enough, so I couldn't imagine what you thought.
Yeah, it was whenever they first came in and started telling us. Kind of doing, being pretty vague about the heart event and damage and blah blah blah. We just weren't getting it. And then heart attack. Dude, Natalie's tears. I mean, aww. I was like, oh no. And I at that point, you kind of feel the entire weight of what just happened. And yeah, so I can no longer eat bacon by the pound. I can no longer have my cup of lard in the morning.
Well, I mean, how does it happen? Is it just like?
It was a blockage in the main artery. And
did you have a stent or a bypass?
I have a stent.
Okay.
So I think it's kind of odd that I was so young and so much got blocked, you know?
So it's probably some genetic component.
Thing. But yeah, heart attack, 39. How about that?
What was the vest for then?
The vest... was because my heart function was at about 25%.
Oh my gosh.
And,
increases the pressure, makes it work easier?
No, I'm on medicine for that, but what the vest does was if I were to pass out, it would shock me back to life. It was a defibrillator, yeah.
Wow.
So I would, if it would, like, kind of go off, it would say, warning, you're about to die. And then you had to hit the buttons, and then you call the hospital or whatever, you go and see somebody. But if you were unconscious, it just wouldn't even ask you. It would just shock you.
So you don't have to use it anymore?
I don't.
So can you sell it?
No. They want it back.
I can see people misusing that for, like, S&M, you know?
Oh, yeah. That's your safe button.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. If you can get it to work,
that's,
I don't
your
know.
Safe one.
It went off one time. Like, it kind of gave me the warning. And I really thought I'd be cooler about it, you know? It's like, you know, a treatment will be, you know, the given, and treatment means the shock, you know, it would cover you in goo, and it would shock you.
Goo.
Like
somebody finished on you.
Like, why am I covered with goo? No, like the...
Here's a straw. What's
the
sonic?
The sonic stuff, yeah.
Oh, yeah. The gel stuff.
Yeah, the gel. So, the goo. So when it went off, I just kind of held it and ran around and showed people in the house, like, if it fixed it, help, you know? So I was completely a mess under pressure.
Oh.
Yeah. But no, I don't have to wear it. It was super embarrassing. It looked like a bra your grandmother would wear. White, thick white bra.
Oh, the man's ear.
Yes, it was a man's ear. Bro. Yeah, yeah. And I had a box that actually, you know, held the electricity, I guess, or whatever it did, that actually kind of distributed the treatment. And it looked like a purse. So I had this purse on with my grandma bra. You know, it's like I got my first period.
Did you have to go to work that?
Yeah. No, I didn't go to work. I was off. But I had to go everywhere.
Just had my period.
With this bra and my purse. You know, it's cool. I can get my lipstick and tampons.
Amazing, like, when you look back, like, you know, medical devices from, like, the 1800s, you know, you wonder, we'll look back now at that device. You know, 100 years from now, you're like, oh, that guy looks like he's wearing a bra. Yeah.
Well, it was under my shirt, so that was good.
That's where bras go.
Yeah, well, yeah. Yeah, duh. Yeah, but, you know, I had to sleep in the thing, and that was awful. It's just completely embarrassing. When this lady pulled out of the box, she goes, okay, we got your life vest. I'm like, okay. She pulls it out, and I go, uh-uh. Nope. I was like, who designed this? Why does it look like this? Right. You know, can I get it in black? Yeah. Or like camo? Right. Or with like some skulls and crossbones on it, guitars maybe?
Be dazzled.
Yeah, I should have been dazzled. Yeah. But like I said, they wanted it back. And they sent me a box for it. And they're like, listen, we want it back. It's super expensive, you know?
That's like the scientist or whatever is like, you know, it'd be really funny if we made it look like a fucking old lady bra.
Yeah, right, yeah, exactly. Yeah,
this is going to be hilarious. Some dude's going to get this and going to hate it. Right. And yeah, I was that guy. I was like, I ain't wearing this thing. No way. Absolutely not. And of course, I was overruled.
Wow.
Everyone.
That's crazy. That's crazy. Mm-hmm. Crazy story. I mean, I don't know, positives that it wasn't like pants you had to wear, I guess.
Yeah, it was like some kind of weird, like, depends, you know, that kind of put the electrodes to my, you know, other areas.
The nor.
Yeah. So, it could have been worse.
Could have been worse.
Could have been way worse.
Yeah. Way worse. Way worse stuff right back after this.
Thank you.
Steelplats Podcast, 303 East Main Street, from right here in Carnegie, along with us, Jay Weaver of Sound Color Productions, Jesse Meller, multi-instrumentalist, and Rayanne Rose. We talked a little bit about heart attacks and things like that. Now we're gonna switch gears and go back into music, because that's what we do and that's what we like to talk about. And I wanted to bring up a little bit about mixing and mastering and the huge varying opinions on it. You know, for the fact that I'm, you know, doing my own solo album now, and I'm sort of tweaking the gears, the knobs, trying to make everything sound great, as great as it can when you're doing it yourself. I read an article about always double the guitar part and pan hard left, hard right. Jay?
Yeah, I mean, it's just like you said at the top there, there's so many different ways you can do it. You know, a lot of people too, they'll take those rhythm parts that are hard left and right and double them, so you have actually four guitar parts going on at once.
See, to me that would be too much. That'd be muddy, I would think.
It depends on how you mix it, because how you kind of mix it is, you take, say you have four guitar parts, and what you do is you EQ, you carve out different EQ spots for each part, you don't have this huge muddy end. So you might cut out like all of it. If you hear it by itself, it might sound like shit. But then in the context of the mix and within all the other guitars that you have, you cut out each EQ for each guitar, so as a sum of the whole, it sounds really big and full, you know. So that's just, you can do it that way.
Yeah, I like to do that as well. Minimum four tracks of just rhythm guitar. Mm. Two in the left, two in the right. Now, I like to use different guitars. Work with different levels of gain.
Mm-hmm.
So you were saying, if there's a break in the song and it's just guitar, it's not the same tone. Like, you could just break it down to maybe a lower gain, and then when the rest of everything kicks in, then the fullness comes back.
To match the sections of the song,
yeah,
too. You know, boost up the choruses, and, you know, do something different in the verses and that type of thing.
And then, like, the supplemental stuff, you can... Like, if you have, like, a little lead or a little part that's kind of, you want to just have off, not maybe through the whole verse, but you can put that left and right and kind of pan that wherever you want, and kind of put, like, the, almost like the decoration of the guitar tracks in different spots in the mix, but have your bass guitar tone left and right, a couple different tracks.
I always put the bass guitar dead center.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. That's what I always do.
Yeah, snare, kick drum, center, and vocal.
Mm-hmm.
Dead center.
I always wanted to, like, mess around with doing something in, like, pure mono. Like, where everything's left and everything's right.
Like they used to do with the Beatles back in the day.
Right.
Oh, when the U.S. releases of all that, and the people put the drums on one side, you know, it was crazy.
I listened to some stuff in headphones now that I never did before, and I noticed, like, hey, wait a second. The drums are all on one side.
Like Jimi Hendrix albums.
Yeah. I'm like, why? That is so weird. I guess, you know, when they had the component stereo pieces back in the day, you know, you have your one gigantic speaker on one side and one on the other, kind of was like a cool kind of thing. You hear a lot of, like, pans back and forth back in those early recordings. It's really cool, but I'm not sure how that would work in a modern, you know, setting.
And there's the guy, it was kind of like 60s jazz, but his name was Esquivel. And it was like when stereo really became popular. And you listen to those recordings from back then, you check them out, because they took that stereo thing. It was just crazy what they did with it. They were just experimenting. And it was, you know, it's kind of that 60s, you know, kind of jazz stuff. It was cool, but, you know, it's a little over the top.
That, and they, you know, always talk about the wall of sound, which I never thought sounded that great, because it sounded like too much.
So some of them were overdone. You can only pack so many sounds into one listening space.
Right.
You know,
right.
It's before it starts to just get chaotic. I'm kind of like a knuckle dragger when it comes to writing songs. Like, I'm not big into a ton of layers. But I really love Queen, and they do exactly that. So maybe just because I'm just not good enough to pull it off, but when I recorded the stuff for the last band, my stuff was just straight down the middle. It was like no real leads, no real effects. I think I didn't put any reverb on anything. It was just straight from the amp with no effects on it. And the guy who played guitar on it and mixed it, he added all the stuff. Mm-hmm. And there was some points I'm like, dude, that's just too much. It's too much. And he didn't really add anything to it. It was like, you know, some chorus, some reverb, some different things. He had a couple of guitar harmonies that I was like, this is not straightforward. I don't know how I feel about this. But of course,
probably didn't even listen to it. He probably just looked at the track like, no.
That's too much. I was like, how come you have all these things running on that track? No, that's unacceptable. But no, he did a great job. But so I've tried to add more stuff without getting too chaotic and without having this massive wall and layer upon layer upon layer. But you do need a certain amount of tracks, I think, to just make it sound modern.
I think the most cut and dry album recorded, like, that I know of, was the Pixies' Surfer Rosa. They didn't really add anything to that, and it was almost mono. It almost sounds mono, but it's not. Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of times, too, though, with the right engineer, there might be like three different reverbs on it, but you can't really hear it, you know. So they do it in such a way where it puts it in a space, and there's something, but when you try to listen for it, you can't hear it. But when they take it away, you're like, oh, something's missing, you know.
Yeah, something's weird now.
Yeah. You know, it's just one of those things where, you know, to get it right, you know. You might have, like, you know, 10 different plugins on this one thing, or, you know, different auxes and all that stuff, but when you listen to it, it doesn't sound like all that's there.
No, it doesn't. Yeah. And there's I'm probably the only one that does this, but when I record a song, and if I'm doing the guitars or the bass or whatever, and I fuck up, I leave it there. Because it's too much work for me to do it over again, because I don't have time for this. I don't have time for this. Mm-hmm. So I leave it in, and no one really ever notices, but every time I hear it, I'm going to throw up, you know? Because it's just like, it's one fret off for like half of a second, and I always hear it, and I'm like, fuck!
Yeah, you definitely hear the mistakes in your own recording. Mm-hmm. You know, there is, I can't remember what song it's on, but I didn't hit the full chord. And, like, I think, like, the fifth of the chord rang a little louder. And every time I hear it, I'm like, ugh. Why didn't I hear that at the time?
It just turns your stomach.
Yeah, I'm like, this is ruined. It's ruined. Forget it.
And what I get scared of, too, is when you're mixing, when you're doing it and you've listened to it for so many times, those mistakes become normal. And then you lose your perspective, and then you forget it was a mistake. You know, because you listen to it, you just think it's, you know, right all the time.
You know? Coolest mistake I ever saw, actually, just, it was Dave Mustaine from Megadeth.
Was that live show?
Live show. He broke two of his strings and continued to play. And that song would not sound the same if he would have not broken those strings. It sounded like he put it there, but he was literally playing on a broken string. Mm. It was really cool. Very cool.
Dave Rules.
He's one of your favorites.
He's one of my favorites. You know him. Huge Megadeth fan. I missed them last time they were here. I wanted to go, but
that was recently too.
Yeah, a couple weeks ago, right?
I was fresh off a heart attack, so
yeah.
And I had the Life Vest on, and they were like, "Hey, you know, concerts might set it off." And I'm like, "Really?" And they're like, "Yeah."
Wow. Well, Dave Mustaine, he was in rehab 15 times.
Yeah,
like 15 different times.
Dude, the best quote about his rehab was, "Being an addict is like making love to a gorilla." It's like, you don't stop until the gorilla's done. You know? Right. I'm like, only Dave can put in those terms.
Nice. Like,
I totally understand that.
Exactly.
Uncle Dave.
All right, more Sex with Gorillas right back after this.
Ever heard of a podcast? People listen to them, they subscribe to them, and they love them. And as a business, doesn't that sound like something you want to be a part of? Well, now you can when you advertise on the Steel Plaza Podcast. Imagine you have a team of creative, technical people at your disposal and a killer podcast just to spread the word about your business. Getting the old business into a new media is not for the faint of heart. but it can happen with the help of the Steel Plaza Podcast. Get a free estimate by emailing us at steelplazapodcast@gmail.com today.
Steel Platin Podcast, 303 East Main Street, right here in Carnegie. Sound Color Productions in the studio, Jay Weaver, Jesse Meller, Ryan Rosen, myself, talking about sex with gorillas, talking about heart attacks, talking about music, talking about recording. Recording me and Jesse a long time ago. We're in a band called the Bone Turkey Orchestra because we thought it was funny to make the initials BTO.
It was fun. And I've always wanted something with orchestra in the title. I think that was when Brian Setzer was kind of doing his thing. And I was like, I want to have an orchestra. You know, and the great part about it was we were a three-piece.
That's right.
We couldn't get any less instruments into a band. So I was like, wow, we're a three-piece. And if we put an orchestra in the title, that would be awesome.
We were a four-piece, but that guy flipped out and quit. Yeah. Over dinner at Eaton Park.
I don't think he was never in the BTO. I think the BTO kind of formed after that dude kind of got pissed and flew away.
He did. He flew.
He got so mad he flew, as we used to say, "Oh, John's gonna fly." And we actually put it that in the lyrics. He's gonna fly. Was that? That's
Porn Star Waitress.
Yeah, he's gonna fly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, from the ashes of that band came the BTO. Also, that band had a recording that we've never heard.
And we've never heard because we went to, like, professionally record an album, and we did. We recorded the whole thing. We've never heard it because John took it.
He flew away with it.
He took it, and he wouldn't let us hear it. Or even give us a copy because he thought that it was going to make millions of dollars.
We were going to steal it.
Now, who has the tracks?
I don't know. We don't know.
The studio.
Well, funny story. I saw the guy that recorded us. And, of course, every time he sees me, he's like, "Oh, hey." Because we were such assholes to this guy. Like, it was straight out of, like, some horror story out of, like, Behind the Music or whatever. And this guy was very animated.
Yes,
we'll just say that.
Very animated.
Everything was effing bad. Effing bad. And he did this, like, weird jerky hand movement.
This awkward, like, conductor's hand movement, it wasn't, like, conducting. It was just as he was accentuating the syllables of his own speech.
Right.
He'd be like, "Fucking bad," and just move his hand.
remember that girl? I forget her name, but she was over there while we were recording, and he was like, "Oh, I'm gonna be up all night mixing this." She's like, "I'll keep you up all night." And then I remember him thinking, "Up all night, everything bad. Up all night, everything bad." You know,
with his little jerky arm.
That's a song right there.
That's
a song. That's like a new country song.
Yes.
That has to be.
So, we never heard that, but the BTO came from that, and we decided to be completely ridiculous. Do you remember how you used to write songs?
How I started them?
No, how we used to write them.
No.
We would take a piece of paper and write note names on them, fold them up and put them in a hat.
That's right, we did. We did that.
And pull out, like, okay, these four are going to be the verse. And then put them back in. And then these three are going to be the chorus. This is going to be the bridge. And
it was like six pieces of paper that said B minor 7 or, like, what was it? There were seventh chords. I know that because that's what Porn Star Waitress was.
Yeah. But yeah, there was quite a few that came out that way. But yeah, we never got a chance to really record those songs great, and that's a shame because we had some good stuff. But right. I did find tapes, and
so hopefully it's in there somewhere.
In there, and then we can give you guys the glory of
how old were you guys?
Lady Devil, Woman Wolf.
Oh God, we were little.
20.
The intention of that band was just to be completely absurd and ridiculous. And I remember we were writing the songs and the lyrics and just stopping and laughing because it was so It was so fucking stupid. It didn't make any sense. And we talked about, we wrote a rock opera called Lady Devil, Woman Wolf, and we talked a little bit about that last time you were on the show. And it was just so absurd and ridiculous. And we would go play these shows, and people were like, wow, these guys are really deep. You know?
It's a nonsense word.
Yeah. And it was like people, places, and things that actually happened. Like, porn star waitress was a real person.
At Denny's.
And then, Denny's. You know, Little Buddy was a real person. We had a song named Leanne. She was a real person, you know?
Right.
Dave's house was a real place.
Yes.
You know? It was awesome. Miss it.
Very awesome. Jay, did you have any bands like that growing up?
Yeah, I was just thinking of that. I remember it was like the summer between, I think, 7th and 8th grade. We had this band, and it was just a trio. It was just drums, guitar, and singer. And I remember we had our first band meltdown because the singer came in with these lyrics, and was like, man, that's great, great. And then, little did we know, he ripped them off from Motley Crue. And we were all pissed off. I was like, you can't do that, you know?
How did you not know it was Motley Crue?
Well, it was just new.
Oh, yeah.
You know, back, you know, because they were just, I think it was off their first album, the one with the guy with the belt.
With the, Molly Crew.
Yeah.
I don't remember the name of that.
He's like, guys, I got something great. Check this out. Skydive naked from an aeroplane. What do you think?
it's a song's called Shout of the Devil. I wrote it totally. It's mine. It's like, okay.
They copied off of me.
Right. They copied on me, dude.
But the singer says he still has a tape because we're recorded. We wrote like about, you know, 5-6 songs, and he says he still has that tape, but I have yet to hear it. I would love to hear it. That's one of those things, you know, it's just like...
What was the name? Was held from you, too, like hostage. Oh, damn it.
I don't know if we had a name. But I remember recording, you know, and he had... we had this one song called Space Age Love Song. And he had this... this toy shuttle. Space shuttle, and it had this button that has these noises, and so when you hit that noise, that was the beginning of the tune, you know, it was taking off, and then it was great. It was fun times.
Did we do anything crazy like that with like toys and stuff?
I played with a drumstick.
I remember recording on the 4-track, and you doing like the main vocals, and me and Colin like sitting like down on the steps going down from the attic and just like whispering into the mics like during your vocals, and we kept them.
Yeah.
Like sometimes we just like repeated back what you said but in like whisper voices, or like they were just completely, I remember Colin was saying like die or whatever, like in said, one song.
It was on Porn Star Waitress that I remember. He's sitting there and he's going, ooh, shit. And like, you could definitely hear it in the left speaker. Like, yeah. Oh my God.
See, I love that stuff. Like, when you have, like, you know, minimal shit that you have to do. You know, we were talking earlier about having, you know, double tracking and quadruple tracking guitar parts. But when you have, like, you know, 4 tracks, mm-hmm. and you got to make shit happen, and you know, then everyone gets around a mic because we only have one pass to get it, and then someone does something crazy like that, and you know, you're experimenting. To me, that's just the best, you know.
What's going back to, you know, where the mistakes you kind of leave in, or like a misfretted chord, or a note that's like kind of bent a little out of tune, just throw some reverb and delay on it, man. It sounds like it's supposed to be there,
right?
You know, and
right.
then like maybe you can never get that note that wrong again, you know, because your ears and your hands will make you play it right. But you know, I like leaving the mistakes too. Well, I mean, not like real bad ones, like, oh, that was completely wrong. But you know, maybe like a little hand noise, or if you have to like kind of hammer onto a note or kind of slide off one, like, oh, okay, that wasn't right. And then there was this one part that we were recording, and the guy was kind of like sliding into them, and I did not want that at all. I was like, no, it's on the click. on the click, on the click, and he didn't listen.
But he kept doing these, like, big slides from the top.
It wasn't quite that ridiculous, but he was, like, sliding into the notes. And now, we've gone before, like, that's the way I hear it now. It can't be the other way.
It's like, right. He didn't know what staccato meant. He didn't know, or...
No, he just didn't listen.
Okay.
He just did his own thing, and I'm glad he did.
You know? Sometimes you play something, you know, it comes out to be a happy mistake. You know,
I always thought like sliding into notes was so cheesy, and like every time I hear that in any song today, I'm like, come on, like you could have done that better, you know?
Right. Well, you know.
Yeah, it sounds like okay. I'm not sure what note I got to be in. I'll just kind of slide until I get it right. I think it's yeah. There's definitely degrees of note slides and rock star, you know,
double stock slides.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I've come across guitar players too that to me I call it like it's the guitar version of a verbal pause. Mm. You know, where someone's like they're sliding because they don't know what you know really right. how to. They just do it because they're afraid of the silence more than the note that they're playing.
Well, Dimebag Darrell wrote an article when he was in Guitar World or Guitar Player magazine, and he was doing like instructional things in there. He said, "You're never going to be out of tune if you just slide up a fret or down a fret."
Oh well, yeah. They always say that you're only half step away from the right note.
Right. Exactly. But you know, that was his philosophy. So many good players back then.
Another one of my favorites, Pantera.
Pantera.
Yep.
Now, the singer, he didn't really do that well afterward.
No, he got in trouble recently.
Oh, he did?
Maybe like a year or two ago. He was at like, he like screamed like white power into the audience.
What?
Yeah. And he was wow.
Like Michael Richards.
Well, he tried to like play it off like, oh, I was drinking white wine and blah, blah. I was like, no, dude. I was like, come on. You know?
I mean, I could see how that's a correlation, but it's always the after apology. You're like, yeah. Oh shit, how can I, you know, say that this was a mistake? You know.
Right.
Well, he was like, it wasn't into the microphone. It was someone recording with a phone or whatever, and he just kind of screamed it, like he leaned over the thing, and I was like, oh man, it's like as if like metal guys didn't have a bad enough kind of, you know. reputation or whatever. It's like, yeah, this gotta happen. It's like, thanks.
Hey, what do you guys think about I was thinking about this the other couple months ago, and just, you know, how the genres of metal and how they've changed over the decades, you know, because, you know, when you think about back in, like, you know, when the beginnings of metal with the Black Sabbath, the Judas Priest, you know, and how heavy everyone thought that was. And then now, today, you have probably like 30 different genres. You know, you have death metal. You have all these different, you know, things. It's just crazy how the music keeps expanding. You wonder, where is it going to go next?
What I don't like is, I like all kinds of metal. What I don't like is the really low growling guy that sings.
Oh, I call him the Cookie Monster vocals.
Yeah. I don't like Cookie Monster. I don't like that. Because you think, like, wow, this would be a really great song, and then you hear the guy doing Cookie Monster, and you're like, what the fuck? Why? Why did you do that?
Yeah, you can't understand what he's saying, and you lose, if there is at least a thought of melody to the song, you lose it, just with the delivery of that kind of vocal.
Right.
For me, not so much vocals is guitar sound. I'm pretty critical in particular. And there's definitely a thing is too much distortion, and when it starts to get to that point where it turns into static,
mm-hmm.
where it's really undefined, it's almost like back that off a little bit
because you can't hear the chord.
You can't hear what's going on. I like a certain amount of clarity in what I'm listening to, and sometimes with the more extreme side of heavy music, you lose that definition.
That's what person I know, she was trying to describe the Cookie Monster vocal, where it's along those lines, that's what they're trying to do, is to try to get heavier, you know, that more distortion type of thing in the vocals, as well as, you know, where you go too far with the guitars, or it becomes white noise at some point, you know, and that's the whole point of the Cookie Monster, is to get heavier and heavier. So I don't, you know. where do you go? What, that's what I was wondering, you know, where does it end?
Right, right.
Is it just white noise with a beat, you know?
And once you lose that definition, then you have to start trying to fix it with volume. You know, I'm going to make this guitar louder at this point just so you can hear what's going on, and then we're going to make the vocals louder just so you can hear it. They're all fighting for the same kind of space, the same sonic frequency block, and the only way to fix that is with volume.
Right. And now here's another example. The band's called Job for a Cowboy, and their music is so good, but the singer just ruins it because he does Cookie Monster.
Mm-hmm.
You're like, whoa, this could be really good. It could be. And like, why did you do that, you know? That's why I always liked... Now, okay, Megadeth, the guitars always sound great. Mm-hmm. They always sound great. I could never really get into his singing voice.
Yeah, there's so many bands have been around that people, you know, Rush, you know, a lot of people didn't like Tom Petty's voice.
I still don't.
Yeah.
I still don't.
Like, I don't like Jethro Tull's voice.
You don't like that?
I just never liked that. And for years, I didn't like Morrissey either.
Morrissey. That's my aunt's favorite.
I love Morrissey.
Yeah, back in high school, I didn't like it at all. But now I love it. You know, but I don't know. But it's just like, there's no way. Or I'll never like Cookie Monster vocal. Yeah. No way.
Yeah, a lot of, you know, the vocals in a band, the voice is always the hardest thing to sell.
Mm.
You know? Like, we've all said it a handful of times already that, you know, the voice is, the music's great, the voice is not good. And I understand with Megadeth, he has that, like, angry, screechy voice, and I think that's kind of why I like it, because I can do that. Like, I kind of sound like that sometimes.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And I can kind of relate to that. But I've always liked singers that kind of go a little off weird like that. Like, I prefer Megadeth to Metallica. It's a big argument, you know? James' voice is a little deeper. A little cooler, you know?
Yeah.
But Dave's is like high, whining, angry. I like that, you know?
It's passionate, you know?
There's definitely a lot of energy and feeling there. Like, I love Mike Patton in any capacity.
He's a great singer, and he can do just about anything, you know?
But a lot of folks don't dig him. And I think that they go back to Epic, and they think of that voice, that whiny, kind of nasally voice that he had on one record. And they kind of, nope, I can't do that.
Yeah, but it's like he made so many different albums with so many different variations of singing style, you know?
I've watched that dude, you know, I so many videos I've watched on YouTube, I listen to so much of his music. That dude can sound like a machine. He can sound like a gospel singer.
Right.
He can do Cookie Monster. He can, if that dude put out an opera record, I would not be surprised.
Right.
You know?
Well, he did a cover of the Godfather soundtrack.
Oh, I did not hear that, and I
yes.
didn't need to.
Yeah. It's pretty good. Mm-hmm. I think it was Godfather 2. But that's all he did, is he just took his band, and they just covered the Godfather 2. And he sang words over, you know, the soundtrack.
Oh, that's wow. great.
Yeah, it's really cool.
He's so weird.
Another example of that is... Okay, Maynard from Tool, he's a great singer, but just the total opposite for me, that guitar player, kind of limited.
Thank God someone else.
You can only
does not love Tool with everything they have.
You can only do so much in drop D.
It all sounds the same to me.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, we're going to go see Tool. I was like, oh, you're going to watch a 90-minute song. Same song for 90 minutes long.
Yeah,
right, exactly.
And I am one of the few people, like, all my, you know... All my friend, because I don't have any friends. They love Tool, and I don't get it. I don't hear it. It all sounds very similar to me.
I love Tool, so
everything sounds like 46 and 2 to me.
Well, that's my favorite song. So,
like, if you like one Tool song, you like them all essentially. And I don't hate them, but like I don't get the
to each their own.
Yeah, I don't get the craziness over Tool because I agree with you. It just sounds
his lyrics are incredible.
He's got a great voice.
He's definitely the highlight of that band.
Yeah, yes, he's got a great voice. Really thought out lyrics, but.
Their
Again,
albums are really recorded
Danny
well.
Awesome.
That's what I like about them.
Yeah. What is it?
Their albums are really recorded well. That's what I like about them.
They are.
I mean, they're top notch.
I don't know who records them. It's not Butch Vig, I don't think.
I can't remember who did.
Yeah, but the instrumentals never really stand out from them. It's really, it's just Maynard.
That's what he's saying, is like you have to wait through like three guys noodling around to hear the rest of the song. And it's like they're really proud of themselves and each other because they have great tempo, but it's like, can we just hear how the song ends? You know?
When it starts,
right? Even with our rock opera, it's only like 4 minutes long.
4 minutes, that's it.
You know, like we crammed like a whole bunch of styles and a whole bunch of changes in a relatively short, it might have been 4.5. And that was one of my goals with BTO. It was to get this ridiculous music and kind of give it to a person in like a reasonable, listenable format.
Right,
we did that. That was awesome.
That is what we did.
Bringing it back to the BTO.
BTO.
I gotta find these tapes.
Man. You have to find them. I have a CD of it, but it's unplayable. Oh. It's like scratched beyond belief. It was in a garage, like under motor oil. You know what I mean? Like,
oh,
and it like held your table up. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like I saw it.
Wonky table.
I was like,
it was a coaster.
I was like, here it is. And the other reason it didn't play is, do you remember back when you could put stickers on CDs?
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Labels. Yeah.
Labels. Mm-hmm. It had that on it.
Worst idea ever.
And it, the glue and the paper, it made it so off balance. So I won't even play in a computer. So
you get some goo gone.
I don't know.
Can you repair CDs like that?
They have CD scratch stuff, you know, that fills in, but I think once the aluminum in there gets corrupted, you're screwed.
See, I haven't seen that kind of stuff in over a decade. No. CD clean. I think I had a unopened pack, and I threw it away within the last like year or two. Like, I'll never use this. You know, who does CDs anymore?
Yeah, I just use warm water and soap.
Uh-huh. I use urine.
Yeah.
My own.
Yeah. It's best to use someone else's.
That's why it's not working.
That's why it's scratched. That's why it's not working.
I'll stop over later.
Okay, perfect.
I'll help y'all with that.
All right, so we'll wrap it up here, guys. Jay, where can we find all your stuff?
Let's see. We got two shows closing this week. I was playing guitar for Avenue Q over at the Hazlitt Theater, which was fun that we ever... show tonight. I don't know if this will air before tonight, but
it will.
Yeah, so come on out to that if you want to see some puppets and adult humor. And Spamalot closed this afternoon. That was a really good run. That's a funny show. I have playing guitar for Big Fish at the end of next month.
Real Big Fish?
No, Big Fish the musical.
Oh, okay.
Sorry.
I thought you meant the ska band from the 90s.
The musical of that old movie with Ewan McGregor.
Okay.
A musical on it.
Nice.
Hey, do you know Mike Clark?
I think so.
That's Spamalot. That's out at that's the theater here, right?
Yeah.
Was that? That's
Stage 62.
62. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mike always promotes that stuff.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I know him from middle school. Anyway,
what do you got, Jesse?
You go to jessemeller.com. And that's where everything is. It's kind of blank right now, kind of bare. Not a whole lot going on. I just had a heart attack. shows to come. You know what, Adam? You were talking about your solo record earlier.
Yep.
And I started writing while I was off, and I put actual pen to paper. Like, I didn't bust out a tablet or a notebook or anything like that, like a computer. I was actually writing old school.
Wow.
And, all organic on this.
Yeah, man. I just kind of head downstairs, turning up on, and just doing it like I used to. Like, you know, I got to a point where I was trying to record everything into the computer and, like, trying to, make songs, record them while I wrote them. And that didn't work. It didn't work for me. Spent a lot of years not being productive because I was trying to do too many things at once.
Mm.
So I simplified it. I turn the amp on. I stick my phone on top of the amp, and I hit record, and I record my riffs that way. That way, like, no pressure.
Mm.
And I don't have to worry about getting it right with the click and making sure I'm, like, fiddling with buttons instead of writing and playing.
Right.
So, yes, new music.
Yeah.
Hopefully soon.
I think that comes out better, too, because it's very... riff oriented, where you're not getting caught up with the technical details of you know, the computer and all that shit. And it's, and it's one of the things where this, the tune will stand on its own because it's how it was written, because you're just playing a guitar and you're singing. That's it. And so it just, I think they come out better that way.
That's how I do mine. I do it like a crazy person. Like, I'll be outside in the yard and I'm like, oh, Jesus Christ. And I have to like run in, and then I turn the recorder on and I start playing, and then the song's done. I mean, you saw me do it, you know?
Yes, I did.
Like, what? She's like, what are you doing?
Like, she's like pushing me down as I'm running outside. So he'll be out smoking and he's like pushing me down and coming inside. And it's like a Tasmanian devil. Like, ah. You know?
Yeah, and that's how the first song was written for the solo album, so that's coming along great. But you're right, the click track is like, it's so distracting.
I think when writing, especially, and Jay, like, I would always try to marry the two of recording and writing, and it's like, you know what, I've read a couple blogs and stuff, and there's one I follow, Tech News, and the guy's like, there is writing, there's editing, recording, mixing. I mean, there's steps. And one thing I saw that I actually tried to use was when I watched the Foo Fighters, some Foo Fighters thing, and they had a whiteboard, and they just had like song names and just like drums, guitar, whatever, and they just kind of scratched them out as they went along. I'm like, that's really good to keep kind of focused, because I get scatterbrained, you know, like you end up like trying to write songs while you're recording it, and the parts aren't that great because you just want to get it done. And that click is just, it's almost like driving you insane. It's like, I gotta finish it.
Turn right,
it
off, right.
Shut the computer down and just bang out some guitars.
Yeah, absolutely. Great stuff. You can always find our stuff at thewireriots.com if you like what you heard at the top of the show and the bumper music. TheWireRiots.com, and then obviously the Steel Plaza podcast. You can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, Spreaker, TuneIn, YouTube. Anything else? Giant Eagle. I'm just kidding.
You got Reverb Nation? Everyone has Reverb Nation.
No, I don't have Reverb Nation. Oh, I don't have MySpace either.
I don't have that anymore.
Okay.
Wait, I do. Do I?
Tom has MySpace.
Tom
from MySpace.
Oh.
Inventor. Right.
Well, no, I think he sold that.
Oh, he did?
He,
he doesn't even have MySpace.
Yeah. He invented it. Yeah, he was like, no, I don't want this anymore.
But yeah, absolutely go to our YouTube, because that's where you can actually see all the cool stuff that we put in the videos for the audio for this. It's a lot of it's a lot of creative stuff that goes into this, and we want you to subscribe, because we want you to keep coming back, keep listening, keep telling a friend. Until next time, right here on the Steel Plaza Podcast.